Good morning, yogis. On this day after Halloween, where the staff shows us their love by sharing this delightful treat with us. And I believe today might be the Day of the Dead, or is that tomorrow? But anyway, we're around the Day of the Dead, if that helps inspire your practice. So as usual, we're going to talk a little bit about the instructions, and then we'll do a guided meditation. And I'll answer a couple of the questions that we got in the bowl while reviewing the instructions. So we started out with anchoring, with having this home base, a way to begin to manage the rather chaotic nature of our hearts and minds, to give us a fighting chance at some settledness and clarity in our practice. And so we started with just coming back over and over, very simply, building collectedness, unification, groundedness, here-ness. And then we expanded the instructions, and we'll keep expanding them, to include more and more of our experience, because ultimately we want to be aware of everything that arises, all of it. And so we started with body sensations, and the instructions were to notice other sensations that arise, that are strong, predominant, whether pleasant or unpleasant, and to even allow our attention to rest with that area of sensation and explore what's really happening below the level of our thoughts about what's happening. But what are the actual sensations and how do they unfold as we're with them? And then Bhante gave the instructions on the elements and on all the different sensations, you could say, associated with the elements. And the intention here, again, is to help us move closer, develop more intimacy with what is this human body. And so the elements, like the sensations of the elements, like pressure and hardness and lightness and heat and coolness, movement, all of those are meant to help us really see the changing nature of the body and the not-self nature of the body. That it's these conditions that come together and then fall apart, come together, fall apart, over and over again. We're not super concerned about which element is present, so we don't need to know if it's water, air, fire, or earth. That actually, trying to figure that out, takes us away from our experience into the conceptual mind. So that's not the purpose of the element meditation. It's actually meant to help us just move closer and be with the actual sensations. And then what we notice when we're with body sensations, some are pleasant and some are unpleasant. There was a question about working with pain. And so the elements meditation can be very interesting with pain. So we have, let's say, an ache in the neck. We move closer and, oh, it's burning, tightness. There's even a little bit of a throbbing nature. As I'm with it, it increases to a certain point and then it starts to dissipate. So that would be an investigation. We might also notice our relationship, and we're going to talk about this much more in the coming days, our relationship to the pain. So often when we get questions about working with pain, the underlying question is, how can I get rid of it? What we're looking for is, how can I be with it? And how can I increase my capacity to be with unpleasantness? Because we're going to get a lot of it as human beings. It's part of the bargain. And so we can we can check out, like, is there, what happens? There's unpleasant sensations. We hate them, perhaps, so if that's true, go ahead, hate them. Hate them mindfully. Really, what's it like to hate your experience? There's no right answer here. Right answer is what's happening. And then the question might arise, is there another way to relate to this? Because we see that hating it doesn't tend to help a whole lot. So is there a moment where we can just rest with, oh, it's just burning? A moment, 2 moments. Don't set the high bar too high. So we'll talk more about this in coming days, but then again, it's also, you know, going in and out. So we're exploring our conditioning. And we're also duking it out with dukkha. Duking it out, for those who are not from the States, duking it out is like having a fight, or, you know, it's like a boxing match. So we're duking it out with dukkha. We're having a little boxing match with dukkha. And then emotions. We talked about emotions, grounding in the body. That gives us our best chance of being with an emotion and learning, again, how to include it, allow it. Emotions are physical sensations and thoughts. Usually that's the combo. So Brian talked a lot about grounding in the body. What are the sensations? How do they change? And again, we can explore our relationship. So some people experience emotions primarily as thought. And so our next object of meditation is going to be thoughts. What is a thought? We should start exploring this in kindergarten, given how important thoughts are in the creation of our world. And it's kind of an enigma. What we find is that thought is a little bit of an enigma because they're incredibly insubstantial. That's one reason we bring them up later. They show me a thought. Can you show me a thought? Like, what is that? Right? And sometimes thought is incredibly dense, right? And creates an entire world, which we then inhabit without knowing that that's happening. And that we then believe and then react to. And then it goes on in a process called papancha, which is a lovely word. Papancha is that proliferation of thought. We have one thought and then it links to another. And then, in Anakya's example, I wonder what's for lunch. Oh, you know, I hope it's that rosemary cornbread. I love that. I'd love to have more of that. Maybe I should learn how to make that at home. I bet, do you think they give us the recipes? You know, and on and on. That's a very innocuous example, right? A more painful example is the one I gave of that note I saw on the board, and then this cascading thoughts about it that led to a whole world. Two things that are really important. Repeat once more. Thoughts are not bad. We as meditators, somehow, almost all of us get the idea that they're bad and we're trying to get rid of them. First of all, good luck. And second of all, that isn't what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring mindfulness and understanding and learning how to not be trapped by our thoughts. We're learning to have more choice with our thoughts, more flexibility, more space. When I say choice, It's really important. The second really important thing to know is that you can't control whether your mind goes off into thought. You can't control whether your mind goes off into thought. So if you're trying to do that, well, the good news is you don't have to. In my early meditation, I thought that's what I was supposed to be doing, and I suffered a lot. And then when I was told very directly, you can't control whether you go off into thought, the moment you wake up, you usually have some choice. Not always, but usually, and you can choose to let the thought go. Was an incredibly relieving moment for me to know that. I'm like, oh, okay, that's so much easier than trying to control whether I go into thought. So let's move towards thoughts and see them as a meditation object. In Buddhism, there's six senses. The sixth one is the mind, and thoughts are considered objects of mind, the mind-heart. And they can be known just like a sound can be known. They can be a present moment experience, thinking. So one place we can explore this is when we wake up, that moment we wake up. We can notice what happens to the thought. So that's taking thought as an object of meditation. What happens? Does it go away? Does it suck us back into the story? Does it slowly peter out? Do we find that we are wanting to keep thinking it? What happens? We can note thinking. Sometimes that's really helpful to clarify that moment. Oh, thinking. If we notice a certain thought pattern repeats a lot, we can note, oh, planning, remembering, rehearsing, judging. Those are like the top four. Fantasizing. Yogi job thoughts. Lunch thoughts. Not so much to kind of get into the content, but to help increase the mindfulness of that pattern of thought. So maybe the next time, instead of being lost for 5 minutes, we're lost for three. We catch it a little earlier. That's how mindfulness of thought develops. We catch ourselves earlier. If we spend a lot of time thinking what kind of thought it is, then it's best to just drop it. Call it thinking. So we can then come back to our anchor. If we find our thoughts repeat a lot, the same thought, usually it's fueled by an emotion. So we can ask, what am I thinking? A feeling. What am I feeling? And mindfulness of emotion. On retreat, all thoughts are basically equal. We're not so interested in the content. We're interested in thought as a mind object, as a meditation object, to understand the nature of thought, how we get stuck in it, how we can let it go. In daily life, we learn to distinguish between wholesome and unwholesome thoughts. Thoughts that are helpful, beneficial, and thoughts that are harmful and not helpful. The skill we develop here in being able to let go of thoughts, just unstick them, you could say, or come out of being hypnotized by them, will give us more choice when we are looking at whether thoughts are wholesome or unwholesome. We'll have more capacity to be mindful of thought in that way. But here, it's just a thought. last skill we developed that's so useful is we learn that we don't have to believe our thoughts. We so often believe what we think, right? Things we would never believe if somebody else told it, you know, said it. But we believe it because it's our thoughts. So that unsticky quality, that unsticking quality helps us to just have space and not automatically believe our thoughts. So we will settle into our meditation, and in the early part of the meditation, I will give a few tips on mindfulness of thought, and we'll try a couple experiments, short ones. So we can settle in, if we haven't already, settle into our meditation posture, both alert and enthusiastic, dignified, and relaxed, settled at ease. Entering into our practice in the way that has been most helpful for us. I think, as Brian suggested, having this beginning way of settling in. So maybe a reflection, maybe body relaxation. And for most of us, allowing the tension to rest or settle with our home base. If you have a more choiceless practice, resting in that. Encouraging that steadiness, stillness, settledness, unification through this tool of the home base. Knowing that all those qualities strengthen through the returning, not through the trying to hang on to the home base, but through the returning to it. The more times we return, the stronger it gets. So lots of returning is good. So the first way we will practice with thoughts is at that moment that you wake up from a thinking story, just take a little glance, you could say, not a hard look, a glance at what happens to the thought when you become aware of it. What is the difference between a thought when you're not aware of it and when you're aware of it? So we'll practice like this for a few minutes. If you find yourself thinking about thinking, then it's time to just let the whole thing go and come back to your home base. We may notice at times the power of awareness to cut through mental proliferation. Awareness does a lot of the work. Our mindfulness does a lot of the work. We just kind of plug it in. Maybe noting thinking, see what happens if you add that note. Is it helpful, not helpful? Or if it's quickly apparent, more specifically, planning, remembering, judging, perhaps your top 4 or 5 popular hits. But if we find ourselves thinking about the labeling, keeping it very simple then, just thinking. When the thought goes away, we come back to our anchor, home base. Another way we can explore the nature of thought is to take it as a primary object for a short period of time. So we can see it as an event that arises and passes away, just like a sound or a sensation. So what we can do right now is just notice the first thought that arises after I finish this sentence. Perhaps you were able to see that thought as an event, an arising. So we can try now. Notice the first 2 thoughts that arise after I finish this sentence. And now, if you wish, we'll take a 30-second period and just notice as many thoughts as you can. So what's it like to see thought as a mindfulness object, as an experience that arises and eventually passes away, maybe quickly, maybe takes a while. How does it feel to relate to thoughts in this way? And so if you wish, you can take short periods. Usually short periods are better. Short periods of time just noticing thoughts as an object of meditation. And if you ever get confused or find that you're proliferating around taking mindfulness of thought, if you're thinking about thinking, then it's a good time to just come back to the steadiness of our home base. And perhaps using the first way of relating to thoughts, noticing in that moment of waking up and then coming back to our anchor. Remembering there's never a right answer. There's just our experience unfolding moment by moment due to many causes and conditions. And we're just planting seeds. Seeds of mindfulness. Seeds of kindness. Ending our practice this morning with the wish that our efforts be for our own well-being and for the well-being of all beings everywhere. So I hope you're getting the flavor that rather than trying to get rid of thoughts, what we're trying to do, you could say, is change our relationship to thoughts. Perhaps not to take them so seriously, to hold them with more lightness, to learn not to be dominated by them, but rather to have some flexibility and space around them. Thoughts are not a problem. The problems arise when we get entangled in thought, hypnotized by them, and lose clarity. And then we always wake up, right? That's the good news. And we have a chance to come back to see, oh, that was just a thought story. And come back to presence, groundedness in this moment. So I got a couple of questions around particularly sticky thought patterns. These are, my teacher calls them karmic knots. I sometimes call them core tangles. And these are patterns of emotion and thinking that we developed usually quite young as a survival strategy, and that because we developed them for protection, they tend to be very tenacious and very convincing. So a very common one is some form of I'm not good enough, I'm not doing enough, and it might have threads, for example, of perfectionism, inability to forgive ourselves, hyper kind of critical, hypercriticalness of ourselves. So there's these strands of belief, of thought, of emotion, kind of all tangled together. You often know that you've hit a karmic knot when you go, oh, not this again, because they're so tenacious and they're painful, right? So what we're trying to learn is not to get rid of these knots, again, same story, but to learn how to have a relationship with them. Another example that I worked with a lot was a kind of feeling like I wasn't going to get what I needed. I remember standing in the lunch line here once during a three-month course, so lunch for 120. I was number four in line, and my thought was, there's not going to be enough for me. You know, and I say that now, and it's funny, but these conditioning, they're kind of irrational often, and they just get triggered, right? Something comes up and triggers these deep patterns, and usually what happens is we get sucked into a vortex. They're so sticky that we just get, and we go on a whole journey of maybe feeling worthless or discouragement or having to leave here. Everybody else can do this and I can't, and doubt and tangled, right? Core tangle. Often these are so unconscious, this conditioning, that we may not even really be aware of it until we start meditating, or we may not be aware of the extent of it until we start meditating. And it's not uncommon for these patterns to come up on a long retreat, very, very commonly. So the first thing we can do is just name it. Oh, there's that pattern. Call it whatever you want to call it. Oh, there's that not enough pattern. Just so that we start to have a chance, right, to not get so hypnotized. We might go, there's that pattern, and then get hypnotized again. But we've started to develop a relationship and started to bring in the possibility of a little space around it. Increased intimacy might be allowing ourselves to feel the emotion of that pattern. And we do this with incredible care because these are painful emotions. So we might do it for 30 seconds, very short. And then the task might be, how do I get out of this vortex? Like, what do I need to do to exit this? You know, similar to some of the instructions that Brian gave. Does looking around help? Do I need to take a fast walk? What helps me? Can I stand up in the hall and feel my feet? Does that help? As we have confidence that we can get out of it, we will have a little more courage and capacity to explore it. And what we're trying to do is develop a relationship of a care when these patterns arise, care and mindfulness. We often tend to kind of abandon ourselves when they arise. So how do we bring mindfulness and kind of the deepest compassion that we can find? We might just go, ouch, which I consider a compassion phrase. Ouch, you know, this hurts. Over time, and for most people this is years, so you're not going to figure this out in the next few weeks. We have to learn to settle into loving the process, not like, when am I going to get there? But over years, what happens is that these patterns become less dense. We can start to see through them. We don't go into the vortex so much. They become lighter. And then eventually they're not so much a problem. It's just like, oh yeah, there's that pattern. A question came up about spiritual bypassing. So if we start with, we have to take the journey, I guess is what I'm saying. We can't just always go, oh, there's that pattern. We have to at some point feel it and really get intimate with it. But like I said, with so much care and kindness and patience and knowing how to get out. Deep healing, very deep healing. And most of us have at least one of these. Some of us have several. Now, don't go looking for it. If it shows, great. If not, that's not what you're doing right now. So you don't have to, like, oh, my God, what's my karmic knot? And you become a researcher. This knot is your research subject. Not thinking so much, but allowing, seeing how it unfolds. Intimacy, befriending, including, compassion. That's where we're aiming. My teacher always said it takes some. With karmic knots, it takes somewhere between 10 years and a lifetime. I just say that, it doesn't mean that you're going to have no progress for 10 years. But the point of that comment is patience, patience, love, compassion, and settle in to maybe the wildness of the journey and the exploration. It's all just life, right? Moment by moment by moment. All right, so as we head into our day, or continue our day for most of you, right? I just want to say a few words about what we call continuity of practice. As we settle deeper and deeper into retreat, we have the intention for our whole day to be our practice, not just the sitting meditation, not just the walking meditation, but the whole thing, just seamless, that the intention of mindfulness runs through our whole day. Now, obviously, there are going to be times when mindfulness has more strength and times when it has less. What's important here is this intention, setting the intention to be mindful. So as we move around, as what Greg calls in-betweening, in between sitting and walking, the rest of the day. I remember when this was first suggested to me. Here's a confession. I turned to my teacher and I said, "You have got to be kidding." That was my first. I was like, "I'm working hard enough." But there are a few ways that if your reaction is that you can work with it. So what I made a bargain with my teachers was to start including certain times that I would bring mindfulness. So one of those times was from getting up from my cushion and going to my walking place. I would be mindful then. Coming back, especially coming back from walking and coming to your cushion, being mindful during that time really supports the sitting practice. It's because you don't have to start again. You've already started. Maybe brushing your teeth. Our first 10 bites of each meal. Sometimes noting helps. Being in the body. Sometimes we might choose certain actions like reaching, having this intention to be mindful of reaching. And just planting that seed brings mindfulness all around. So you can feel free to play with these instructions in a way that doesn't feel like oppressive, but actually brings out curiosity and enthusiasm. Eventually it becomes just second nature to have that intention all day. Some of you are probably already doing that. One aspect of this continuity when we start our mindfulness at the end of the period, getting up, is to make sure that our meditation spot is neat and organized so that the aisles are clear so people can walk. Maybe putting our stuff on our cushion, not next to it if it's in the middle of an aisle. So this kind of neatness and cleanliness is part of this continuity, and it's a factor that supports the seven factors of awakening. That cleanliness is actually listed as one of the supports for the awakening qualities in the mind. So we can consider that. Any other announcements this morning that I might be forgetting? Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you, Kim. So Kim, as part of her training, will be sitting in on interviews to just learn. First of all, this is optional. If you come into your interview or your meeting, we used to call them interviews, too intense, right? So if you come into your practice meeting and Kim's there and you would prefer for her not to be there, it's completely okay to say that. She won't be offended. She'll just step out into the hall for your meeting so that if that's what you need, you can have that. No problem. The other thing to remember is that she's really watching me more than you. so you don't have to worry about, you know, is she judging you or whatever. She's trying to see how we teach. And so that will be her primary focus. So you don't have to worry. Anything else around that, Kim? Is that good? Okay. All right, dear yogis. It's a little foggy outside, but it's supposed to clear up. I wish the same for your hearts and minds. A beautiful day for practice.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.